Hello, hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Power Up and Game. I'm your host, Michael, and joining me as always is my main man, Taylor, who also has an announcement. Taylor, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited to get into our show today because we had an Xbox Showcase.
As usual, it's been like that for the past couple of months.
Well, we've been talking about Xbox for the past couple of months, but we actually have games to talk about. So I'm excited to talk about that. Excited to get into some of our other stories, like Warner Brothers. Just I'm sorry, the Warner Brothers story, Michael, is gonna be wild. That's all I'm gonna say. And some pretty cool news about the Helldivers studio staying independent, which I think is a good move for them. So really excited to get into all that. It's been a great week here for me personally. And yeah, do have a small programming note about the podcast. We've been posting the podcast on Wednesday nights, and we've been recording on Monday nights. But because we want to have more relevant news to talk about, and we don't want things to go out of date, we moved to Wednesday night recordings, and we're going to be posting on Thursday nights from now on. So starting with this episode's going to be out on Thursday night, hopefully. Everything else is staying as is. Nerds Talk Movies, Long Box Hunters, all that's staying as it is. But yeah, Power Up and Game, just moving it back one night.
Alrighty, man. One day we're gonna find like the perfect scheduling for us.
We will. That's the problem, man. It's just the figuring out when's the best time to record a podcast about gaming news. And then the best turnaround is like, you record it, you edit it, you get it out in the same day. But it's just, my schedule doesn't work out like that right now, and neither does yours. So hopefully we'll get to that point, but as it stands right now, I think this is the best way we can go about it, just a one-day turnaround.
Sounds right. Sounds fair to me, especially since now that means we don't have to worry about you overworking yourself and trying to do six different podcasts.
I'm fine.
Alrighty. Alright, so here we go. Let's go ahead and get into our episode.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into this episode. And before we do, though, let me get out this disclaimer. As always, you can find sources from all the topics we're going over today down in the description of this episode. We do that to give out proper credit, and if anyone wants to read further about the topics we cover. Also, it's important to note that you should take any rumors or reports we cover with a grain of salt until they are officially confirmed or denied. Of course, some reports and rumors will be more reliable, but nothing is 100% in the gaming industry until it is properly announced, and sometimes, even then, it might get canned in the future. Lastly, we are just two dumb idiots who love video games and love talking about video games. These are just our opinions. We'd love to hear your thoughts on everything we're going over today, but please just try to remain respectful. With that disclaimer out of the way, Michael, go ahead and talk about our stories of the week.
All right, we are going to talk about the Xbox Partner Preview. This will be our reactions to the, honestly, pretty decent show. It wasn't too long, didn't feel like it was dragged out. So let's just go ahead and get right, well, actually, yeah, let's just go ahead and get right to that. Taylor, what did you think about the Xbox Partners Preview?
I thought it was a pretty fun event. It was not overly long. It was, what, about 30 minutes?
Yeah, it was something close to that, like 30, 35, something like that, yeah.
It was also said, like, this was going to be a smaller showcase. That's the best way to put it. So, yeah, man, I thought it was a pretty good showcase overall. Not overly long, pretty chill. Few games that I thought were interesting, but nothing to really write home about.
Yeah, it really felt kind of like a smaller show. Kind of like, I don't know, as if like they had to bring something out, or they were like, oh man, we don't have anything big to announce, so here's like a small partner preview. Which I like when companies like Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo decide to do like, hey, instead of showing our first party stuff, we're going to show you stuff that are coming soon from third party and second party developers and publishers, which I always enjoy those. So for me, this this version, this Xbox partner preview, while it was short and condensed, I also kind of felt like it was just thrown out there. But it's not a completely bad thing, because I did enjoy it. Like you, I did find some cool stuff in here, but it just didn't feel like a showcase. I know it was called a preview, but it really just seemed like a throw it out there and show you that there's stuff coming to the Xbox kind of thing.
As for what was actually shown specifically, what did you really like from the partner preview? For me, like Unknown 9 Awakening, I thought that was, I think it was the first thing.
That looked kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think that looked really cool. It was one of the standouts to me. The Altars was another thing that I thought was a really cool concept. That looked really cool.
Yeah.
For a game that I'm not sure I'd love that type of game, but the concept's so unique that I sat there and I was like, yeah, it's going to be on Game Pass, though.
Yeah, that is.
It's one of those games that the concept is worth trying out alone.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool mixture of two different genres. It has the whole grid-based base building kind of thing that you see with, like, Fallout. What was that mobile game? I forget what it was called. But where you have to take multiple levels in a grid-based kind of deal. And then they mix it with what seems kind of like a roguelite. And I was like, okay, that's actually kind of cool. Because I kind of like roguelites if it's done right. I like the whole idea of, hey, you don't have to finish the game in one go. See how far you can go. And when you die, yeah, you start over. But you start over with new experiences and learning new things. Like, okay, that's really cool. I think it's a great way to expand stories and universes. I thought Altars looked pretty cool. But for me, yeah, it was the Altars. Sleight of Hand sounds cool. They didn't show anything. They didn't show any gameplay. They just kind of showed the concept. But Sleight of Hand looks pretty cool. Unknown 9 looks awesome. Frostpunk 2. That's the one that got me. And I was like, oh, snaps. That looks really cool. So for me, it was really Frostpunk 2 that stood out over everything. But one thing that caught me off guard was the Roblox Griefville Chucky game. I couldn't understand what was going on there. I was like, oh, okay. It's Dead by Daylight with Chucky in Roblox. I'm surprised that they're making a big announcement like this during a partner preview. And they showed off a good amount of gameplay. And I was like, oh, wow, this is actually very interesting. I don't play Roblox, but I don't know the target audience for Roblox in this preview. But it's kind of cool to see that everything, like you said, from the indies to the bigger AAA developers and whatnot, it is pretty cool to see that they have a pretty diverse list of games and genres during the preview. But for me, yeah, Sleight of Hand, The Outers, and Frostpunk 2 were the big standouts for me.
I would also say The Sinking City 2. That was probably what Sleight of Hand was for you. Where I saw the trailer for The Sinking City 2, never played the first game. I was like, man, this is pretty intriguing. It looks, yeah, I like it. It's pretty cool. And then no gameplay for it. So I just, it was one of those things that I was like, all right, well, let me know when you get gameplay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When they showed in-engine cinema, I was like, oh, well, okay, never mind. That means we're not going to get anything. You're just going to show us a cutscene or something. But, you know, I was actually really caught off guard by The Sinking City 2, because wasn't I going through all kinds of like legal, the first one went through so many legal litigations that people were surprised that it even came out. Like, wasn't there some kind of dispute between the developer and the publisher? Like, there was something going on with the licensing, and I'm surprised there's a Sinking City 2, to be honest. And they showed off Final Fantasy, what was it, 14? So that's kind of cool. Honestly, I don't know who's playing Final Fantasy 14 for Xbox this late in the game. Like, 14 has been around for a long time. You know, everybody's playing stuff like, actually, what's the MMO everybody's playing right now? I guess 14 is still pretty popular, but is it popular enough for it to be on Xbox?
I mean, if it's putting on another platform. I mean, I don't see anything. I don't see how this can go wrong for the game.
I mean, it just seems so weird. I mean, well, with you needing Xbox Game Pass, Xbox Live Plus, it's a plus 14 has its own subscription. I don't know. I would think like that would be kind of a a big risk. And I thought that was one of the reasons why 14 never came to Xbox. But hey, I mean, Elder Scrolls Online, I guess that's doing well. That's holding up strong on PC and consoles. So I guess there's room for multiple MMOs on consoles.
So the last two things I do want to talk about is the Stalker Legends of the Zone trilogy, which I thought was a really cool announcement. And the last thing, Monster Jam Showdown. This came right after Stalker. This came right after that dark and depressing franchise and that trailer. And I was like, here's some monster trucks racing into each other. I was like, what fuck? And what a juxtaposition there.
Yeah, it looks so weird because the monster trucks look realistic. And then they have like these goofy, vibrant, almost neon UI. And I was like, wait, this clashes. This is not fit at all. So I'm trying to figure out, like, is it arcadey? Is it realistic? I don't understand this. Like, where are you guys going with this? Because your UI does not fit with the rest of your game.
I thought it looked good, though. I will say that. I do think it looked good. I just thought it was really funny how it's just this
dark
and dreary world of Stalker, and it's putting you in that like mood of like, all right, this is serious here. Like, this is a serious game. And then the next thing Xbox shows is just this very fun monster truck game. Whiplash here.
I don't know who thought of that, but they're like, you know, that's kind of depressing. Let's perk this show back up a little bit with some monster trucks.
Yeah.
Like, gosh, Lee.
What are your thoughts on, your final thoughts, I guess, on the showcase? And then we can move on.
It was pretty solid. I would have liked to see the developers talk a little more about their games. Just for stuff like Sleight of Hand and The Sinking City 2, where they didn't show gameplay, but they give you a chance to talk about a little bit to give players a better idea of what you're going for. And I did figure out that The Sinking City was the game I was thinking about that was going through a bunch of legal issues. But we can talk about that on a different episode in the future as it gets closer to launch. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid show. And I give it a solid 7. I would have liked to, again, hear a little more about the games that was just announced but didn't show gameplay. But I am kind of glad that they kept it short and sweet for everybody.
Yeah, and I think if they did that, while it might have worked out for some games, if you just send the developers out there and be like, hey, talk about the game, they don't have a whole lot they want to reveal just yet,
yeah,
then it becomes a thing where you're just wasting people's time, and then you're just ballooning the show out. So I get the way they did it, because it was basically like, here's a trailer, here's a QR code, go to the Xbox wire post about it, where we have interviews and more information. So all that was really cool. And I'm excited, actually, for a lot of these games that were shown here. I was really surprised at how much of this show I actually liked. Because I thought I was going to sit here and be like, you know, just not that into it. Not into, like, 90% of these games. Instead, I came away going, like, honestly, about 50%, I was at least interested in learning more about.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool, too. Alrighty. Well, we went from some pretty cool news to hopefully the only bad news we have for this show. EA reportedly cancels the rumored Mandalorian game. This news broke right after we recorded last week, but we still wanted to talk about it. As reported by IGN, EA laid off roughly 5% of its workforce, which is roughly around 670 people, and here's an excerpt from the IGN report. Quote, additionally, EA will be restructuring its Battlefield team somewhat following the departure of Marcus Leto, announced yesterday. Is sunsetting Ridgeline Games, folding some of its developers into Ripple Effect, Danny Isaac and Darren White at Criterion will oversee single-player work on the series going forward. And EA will also sunset a number of mobile games, including the already announced F1 Mobile Racing and MLB Tap Sports, as well as Kim Kardashian's Hollywood and The Lord of the Rings Heroes of Middle-Earth, which was released less than a year ago. IGN understands that EA intends to reorient its business and development plans to focus on a handful of its biggest franchises, including EA Sports, Apex Legends, Star Wars Jedi, Iron Man, Black Panther, Battlefield, Need for Speed, Dragon Age, Skate, and The Sims. IGN also has learned that a team is still working in pre-production on the next Mass Effect, though BioWare's current focus remains on Dragon Age, end quote. It was also said that Respawn, upcoming first-person shooter, which was reportedly going to be a Mandalorian game, was canceled as well. Insider Gaming, who were the ones who originally reported about the Mandalorian game being in development at Respawn, posted another article detailing what could have been. Here's what they said in their report. Quote, first, it should be said that by all accounts, this game was fantastic. And that isn't just coming from the developers, but from everybody who had the opportunity to play the game. Feedback from playtests was also positive and surrounded by buzz, with the developers enjoying the entire process of working on the project. That being said, for whatever reason, EA felt like the game was too much of a financial risk and decided to pull the plug. End quote. As for some of the finer details, here are some of the bullet points. You would have played a Mandalorian bounty hunter, not Din Djarin. I think that's how you said his name, right?
Din Djarin. You were way closer than I thought you were going to be.
Well, thank you for that, at least. For giving me some credit.
Anytime, buddy.
Oh, thank you. It was said the game started in the Den, which was the hub that acted as the player's base. There, you'd have your ship, upgrade stations, armory, and all that kind of stuff. It was a linear game that would have had some open areas to explore and find their bounties and other secrets. Combat would have been quick, allowing for verticality and dashing from the Mandalorian's jetpack. This one is pretty interesting, and I'm just going to read it verbatim from the article. Quote, it was also said that there was a takedown feature which would see your character perform takedowns, somewhat reminiscent of Doom, but a lot less glory, to take down enemies, end quote. Many enemies were stormtroopers, but you come across boss-like enemies, such as machineries, outlaws, and other bounty hunters. This wasn't mentioned, but considering it's Star Wars, I would imagine that there could have been wildlife enemies as well. But again, that last part is just speculation on my part. It wasn't in the Insider Gaming's article. A few missions were near completions, and it was being developed for current-gen consoles and PC. My goodness, that actually sounds pretty cool. Taylor, what are your thoughts on this rumored Mandalorian game that we know was a canceled Star Wars game, but we still don't know if it was a Mandalorian game?
I kind of want to back up a little bit to the EA sunsetting a number of mobile games. Never would have thought in my lifetime I would have heard Kim Kardashian and Lord of the Rings in the same sentence.
So I mean, that's that EA was, for you.
That was something right there. But in regards to this canceled Mandalorian game, yeah, I don't get it. I really don't. Like, I wasn't really that excited for it being first person. I wasn't that pumped about the fast-paced nature all that much. But a lot of this seemed really exciting to me. Especially the stuff about, like, you're a bounty hunter, you're taking on bounties, this hub called the Den, like, all that sounds, like, really cool. The takedown feature sounded awesome. Everything about this, pretty much, while it wasn't all my cup of tea, it was still like, alright, this seems like Respawn. They got something that they're really pumped about on their hands. And to now hear that EA has canceled it, and they had, and what was it? They laid off around roughly 670 people. It's something that has become a chronic thing in the industry, and we've been seeing it all year.
And the year just started.
Yeah, and the year just started. So it's nothing we could really add to the conversation other than what we always say during these types of stories, that we hope everybody affected by the layoffs lands on their feet. In regards to the game, though, it's just, I don't get it. You have what appears to be a home run, something that it seems that one of your best developers are working on and seem passionate about. Why cancel something like that?
I mean, EA had to see something that the rest of us didn't see. Well, I mean, we didn't have seen anything, but they had to see something. There was something there that they know that we don't. Man, I don't get it myself. The only thing I could think of is tax write-off reasons. It's probably a deal with Disney. It's probably a legal thing with a contract that they have with Disney and the Star Wars license. They even talked about that they want to step back from more licensed games and they want to do more of their in-house stuff like Madden and whatnot, which is a license. There's the whole sports division. It runs on licenses. So that was just a weird thing for them to say. But yeah, it's so weird. It had to be something legally binding that they know that we don't, that allowed them to just be like, hey, we put money into this, but we're just going to put it up as research and development. And who knows, they might push it to a different kind of game. They might let them revisit them like, hey, instead of a Mandalorian game, because we don't want to use the Star Wars license for this, create a new IP. Or, hey, we're going to revitalize one of our old stagnant, dormant IPs. And we want you guys to take what you were going to do with the Mandalorian game and do that instead. I don't know, man. You say it's a home run. Respawn has already proven that they can do Star Wars with the Jedi franchise.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because there's been a lot of rumors about it being licensing. The main reason behind it is something with EA and Star Wars. But from the IGN report here about like what they are going to focus on, Star Wars Jedi is included. So at least one Star Wars project. EA still seems keen on continuing in some kind of way or fashion. So I don't know, man. It's just, they must have something they want Respawn working on. That isn't
this more Apex.
Maybe, I don't know. Apex was included. I mean, plus, obviously, they want more Apex. It's a live service and it's free to play. Like, it's exactly what EA loves.
And it
so
makes
much.
Them money.
Yeah,
it's their Fortnite. It's their Fortnite. It is the success that they want any of their games to have. I mean, but they are working on a new game in the Titanfall universe. So maybe that team is going to be pushed towards that game, wherever that game is going to be.
Do you remember where that came from, that report? Because I could not find it. I wanted to add it to the show.
You know what? I saw it on my Twitter/X, so I'll actually look that up right now while we talk about the other reports. But yeah, maybe their movie moved to that. But we do know for a fact that it's not Titanfall 3, so that makes me sad.
Yeah, while he looks that up, it's a thing where nobody at this point, I think, is excited for a lot of EA's properties. And even the properties that they are excited for, I think there's just hesitation behind anything EA related right now. And you think back, what, 15 years ago? Man, that was a different story. And what EA has now become, and this very live service centric, and let's have free to play monetization everywhere, battle passes. It's sad to see, man. It really is. And then you see a story like this where, like, oh yeah, the single player first person game that from this Insider Gaming report, just from the outside looking in, absolute home run, and they cancel it. It boggles my mind because it just seems like another hit like Star Wars Jedi was for you.
Yeah, that goes to show you that no matter how well your studio does, the higher-ups are even scared of losing a single dollar.
Dude, you talk about layoffs. I mean, look at Insomniac.
Yeah, one of the best studios Sony has.
They did everything right. Yeah, Spider-Man 2 cost a lot. That is true. But at the same time, it made a lot of money. It was a great game. There's nothing they could have done, and even they were affected by layoffs. Like, it's just...
Now, if they were able to make it for $100 million and kept that same quality, I'm sure Sony would have been happier. but they still, it doesn't matter.
I don't think that would have affected it, though. I do, there probably still would have been layoffs there.
Oh, yeah, no, there would still been layoffs. And that's the thing. No matter how well your company does, and I'm speaking for developers, no matter how well your company does, these bigger corporations do not care. If laying people off will save them a couple of dollars so that way they can hit their record profits, they will. No matter if your game only costs $50 and you made $300 million in sales, they will still lay you off to make the extra buck or two to hit record profits. So unfortunately, there's nothing they could have done for that. Also, going back to EA, so that whole Titanfall came from Game Mess Mornings podcast.
Ah, Jeff Grubb.
Yeah. So it came out from there. People are reporting on it. Now they're saying that they are working on something in the Titanfall universe. They didn't say it was Titanfall. And what was it? Last year, Respawn talked about that they were working on other things in the Titanfall universe. Mm-hmm. So this isn't really news.
Me personally, I think Jeff Grubb is very reliable in the gaming sphere. So I trust his reporting. But as for like what Respawn does next, that's the only thing I could think of, man. That's the only thing that makes sense to me is put more hands on deck for that. And yeah, I mean, well, deal with Disney's licensing stuff. Like, that's the only thing that makes sense to me. But even then, you're still dealing with Disney and their licensing stuff because you got Jedi Fallen Order, that franchise. So what is interesting to me is still nothing about Battlefront.
I think EA pretty much gave up on Battlefront. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that the new remaster did happen. I forget who actually did that one.
Yeah, and that's coming out soon. Those remasters. That collection or whatever it is. So, 64 players online, by the way. Which is pretty really cool. Exciting. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's just, don't really get it with this Mandalorian game. Sounds like a really good concept, too, other than just me personally, not a big fan of first person. Just that, everything that was said about this game in the Insider Gaming Report seemed to me like, man, if it was in third person, I would have been way more excited. And I was already kind of excited for it.
What if the reason that it got shut down was because they couldn't find a way to monetize it?
That wouldn't surprise me. That would not really surprise me at this point.
That's the one that gets everybody.
To be fully transparent, I say this as somebody who, whenever we get into what are we playing, I'm going to say I'm playing Madden. So I'm aware and very familiar with EA's monetization practices.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, but it's, I mean, it's EA, so maybe they just couldn't figure out a way to. Ooh, what if they wanted to make it a live service kind of game?
Well, speaking of, Michael, you want to get into our next story?
Which goes into our next story, yes. You beat me to it. Yes. WBE, for some strange reason, is doubling down on free-to-play and live service games. Oh, my goodness. You know what? It's probably best we just get into the meat and potatoes with this story. You all know the deal with WB Games, Suicide Squad, Killer Justice League, and all that nonsense. During a Morgan Stanley conference, Warner Bros. Discovery CEO and president of streaming and games, JB Parrott, I really hope I said that name right, because I think, or is it Parrottee? I think it might be Parrott, had this to say regarding the company's strategy and where things are going. Props to VGC for pulling these quotes, by the way. Quote, the challenges we've had is that our business historically, there has been very AAA console based, and so, as you know, that's a great business when you have a hit like Harry Potter. It makes the year look amazing. Then you don't have a release, or unfortunately, we also have disappointments. We just released Suicide Squad this quarter, which was not as strong, it just makes it very volatile. End quote. Parrott will go on to say, quote, we think the opportunity for us, which again, this is multi-year opportunity, because games is certainly a bit of a long cycle business too. But the opportunity is to take those four franchises and be able to develop a much more holistic approach particularly around expanding into the mobile and multi-platform free-to-play space, which could give us a much better and consistent set of revenue, and you will see us launching later this year some mobile free-to-play games, which we hope will start building that. And then, secondarily, live services. So rather than just launching a kind of one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter, that is a live service where people can come today and live and work and build and play in that world on an ongoing basis? End quote. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's not the end quote. And so we think we've got the franchises, we've got some of the greatest studios' capabilities, and we have a roadmap and a strategic investment plan to try and build out that business. And we think there's meaningful growth over the course of the next couple of years. End quote for real this time. Taylor, what in the what is going on with these suits? What are your thoughts on this nonsense?
Michael, do you hear that? You hear that phone going off?
What is that, Taylor? What's going on? What's that sound for?
It's because I fucking called it. It's because I called this. I literally said this last week, talking about Suicide Squad and going, yeah, WWE ain't going to learn from this. They're liable just to double down on it. Not 1 week later. I don't get a lot of things right, people. So please humor me here. I feel very vindicated in my take last week about this, because I was just going, yeah, I don't trust Zaslav. I don't trust Warner Brothers to figure it out. I'm very concerned about the future of DC as a DC fan. Not because of James Gunn and Peter Safran, but because Warner Brothers is at the head of that, and they will find some kind of way to screw it up. And this is just another example of that right now to me, because my take on this is that Warner Brothers believes Suicide Squad failed not because it was a bad game, not because of the live service elements, but because the console market is volatile. That's their takeaway.
I mean,
it's comical, honestly. I'm not even mad at it. It's so comically, like, I don't understand how that's how you, what you get out of that.
It's like a cartoon villain, really. It's like,
yes.
Oh man, I didn't learn my lesson.
It's a cowardly chicken shit heel in professional wrestling, to whereas their reasoning doesn't make any sense to the point to where it's just funny. And it's very similar here, to whereas their reasoning for this is just like, you know what? It's not the live service that's the problem. It's not that we monetize the hell out of a $70 game. We should lean more into that because that's what people want. The problem was that it was a console game and we poured so much money into it. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Hey, man, Taylor, I'm be the devil's advocate here. I hope WB really does double down on this, because I would love for them to be the example of why these live services games are tiresome. The too big to fail attitude that some of these companies have, I would love for them to trip over themselves and be like, oh my goodness, this doesn't work. Or maybe we'll get something cool like another PAL world. Maybe we'll get a AAA PAL world or something close to that, you know?
Don't try to win me over with PAL world promises.
Or, you know, everything can't be like the first 4 or 5 cool years of Destiny 2. We get that. No, even Destiny 2 fell off. Even Fortnite had a moment when it fell off and had to come back. It happens. Live service games, for the most part, are volatile. They're not sustainable as these big corporations want to think that they are. Because he's sitting here talking about, yeah, we got 4 franchises that we can make live service games. Taylor, you and I talk about this what feels like every week now. Players' time and money are finite. You're really going to separate your player bases between 4 different franchises that's all live services on console and then double down on it on mobile? Like, bro, where do you think all these players are coming from? Like, how do you think this is going to be sustainable? Because you're going up against other, honestly, far more popular live service games, some of them which are paid for, like Pal World, and you want to go on like, oh yeah, it's Harry Potter, but it's Harry Potter Hogwarts Legacy Edition live service, which I can see that working, to be honest. But then all I can think about is like, man, isn't that just Club Penguin only with wizards and witches? So like, that's you guys are just doing Club Penguin. That's all you guys are doing. And it throws me off so much because I'm just like, man, I don't know where they think all of these infinite number of players are coming from, but I cannot wait for these things to just drop dead because these suits think that players have unlimited money and time.
Hit the nail on the head there, especially that last part, because I'm looking at this last part of the quote, or one of the last parts of the quote, where Perrette said, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that is a live service where people can come today and live and work and build and play in that world on an ongoing basis? The part of that sentence that I really want to focus on here, where people can come today and live and work and build and play. Play's the last thing. I understand I'm being trivial here. I'm nitpicking. I'm being an asshole. I agree. But at the same time, it's fucking hilarious.
Because you know play was the last thing he just pulled out of his ass.
How this was said here, how Perrette was like, where people can come today and live and work and build. We live and work already. We don't want to do that in a video game. Some people do like building simulators. Some people do like, hell, I play Pal World. Pal World has a building mechanic and it's fun. It's not as good as it could be, but it's fun. The problem is a lot of these live services, it's exactly what you're talking about, Michael, is they believe the player's time is infinite.
Well, maybe that's part of the in-game currency. You live and you work inside their game space. You know, maybe you get magic points and you can redeem those in some kind of perk system. You know that's where it's going to go to. They're going to create some stupid little perk system. They're going to create their own little their own little ecosystem in there. They're going to create an economy, and because they want you to live and work and build there, Taylor. They want you to live inside the world of Harry Potter.
We just want people in the world. We want them looking at the screen at all times. And when they're not looking at the screen, they should be wondering why they're not looking at the screen.
Yeah, I do like that how these suits are getting louder now. Like, they're not even saying the quiet. They're not even like keeping the quiet part to themselves, saying it out loud. It's like, no, we want you to live in our world. We want you to spend money. We want revenue. Okay, that's it. That's what we want you in this world for. We want the revenue. So I'm like, okay, at least he was honest about that. It's like, hey, we're trying to make a consistent set of revenue here. Okay, we want you in a space to spend money. That's it. We don't care about you having fun.
That's how low the bar is for you. Is at least they're being honest about their scummy practices.
Yeah. And, you know, not one time did he put in there how the games are going to be fun to play, Taylor. He was always like, oh, no, we're going to make mobile free-to-plays. We're going to make console free-to-play, multi-platform free-to-play. Yeah, free-to-play, which means it's going to be heavily monetized. And like you said in his quote at the end, play was the last thing he talked about. And he didn't even go into details about that. It's just like, well, how's that going to work? Don't care. Let you live and work and build in this world. And it's just, my goodness, it's not even tone deaf anymore. Like, they are saying this unironically. They really want this to be the future of gaming. Alrighty, on to our last story of the week. Sony has not acquired Helldivers 2 developer Arrowhead Game Studios. This last story is pretty straightforward. There's been some speculation and rumors spreading online that Helldivers 2 developer Arrowhead Game Studios has been acquired by Sony, and an announcement was coming soon. Arrowhead Game Studios' very own CEO, Johan Palstad, Johan Palstad responded to this news over on Twitter/X by saying, quote, this is fake, unless I've missed something. End quote. So, Taylor, that's pretty straightforward. You can't get any more from the horse's mouth than that. What do you think about this whole silly rumor that got shot down real quick by the CEO.
Happy for Arrowhead. Happy that Helldivers 2 is as successful as it has been. I like a lot of what Palstead has said in the past about Helldivers 2, about how you have to earn the right to monetize. It seems like they do a lot right with the game. Not saying it's a perfect live service, not saying it's a perfect game, but I think it's a game that's made with the... It's kind of what we were making fun of with Warner Brothers, right? How they said play last, and they were more worried about living and working and building in their worlds. It seems like Arrowhead made a game where they focused on playing in their world above everything else.
Yeah, silly how that works, huh?
Yeah, and it's very curious how their game was successful. It must have just been because they partnered with Sony console.
No, that was it. Yeah.
That had to be.
Being on only two platform rather than more than three. That had to be the thing.
Had to be the thing. But yeah, man, it's a thing where I'm happy for Helldivers. I'm happy that they're remaining independent, because I honestly think that's the best thing for them right now.
Yeah, I think if they went to Sony...
You're tying yourself down at that point. Like, maybe you do in the long term is you... Oh, God. That's a whole nother story entirely.
Well, from when they went to Microsoft, got bogged down, and then bought their
independence and now with Sony,
started doing their own thing, and now they're doing Sony. Yeah. It's like, learn from Bungie that being tied down isn't always the best. In fact, Toys for Bob just bought their independence back. So it just goes to show that, you know, being tied down by these big companies aren't what they always seem to be. And even, I forgot the name of the studios they did Baldur's Gate 3.
Larian?
Thank you. Yes, Larian. They're just like Arrowhead, where it's like, hey, we're going to keep independent. We're going to make fun games. We're going to focus on games being fun, you know? And guess what? People flocked to Baldur's Gate 3. It even won awards. Why? Because it was fun. It was interesting. They decided to build on a world. They decided to build on characters rather than monetization. So yeah, I'm glad Arrowhead Studios doing the same thing. I'm glad that they have the idea of making games fun for the players first and foremost, then gaining that trust to monetize. Because at this point, the way Helldivers 2 is going, if they did a paid expansion, I don't think anybody would complain.
Yeah, it was a game, like I said, that seemed developed to play well and be fun, and then we'll worry about all the other stuff. And I think we're seeing the payoff of that, which is a lot of love and admiration about the game. And it's not all like, yeah, this game's perfect. People have issues with the game. Legitimate gripes.
Mostly the server.
But it's never out of a place of this game's absolute trash. It shouldn't have been made. It was completely greedy. It really just comes across as, hey, we just want the game to be better. We want the game to be better. It's fun. We want to see it grow and see what it could be. And I also love how its player base seems very adamant that there should not be a PvP mode.
Man, I'm so happy to hear that kind of stuff, to where like, oh man, well, I mean, you already have friendly fire, so I think there's plenty of PvP for everybody. Yeah. But I'm so glad that they're focused on, hey, this is made to be fun, okay, with your friends. You know, you guys grab a couple of beers, you know, you hop on when you can, and you know, you just blast a bunch of bugs and robots and you have fun with it. And not everything needs to be competitive. Not everything needs to be PvP. Not everything needs to be a rank system. Sometimes you can just have fun shooting and blowing stuff up. Like, sometimes the simpler, the better.
By the way, just shameless plug here. If you want to read a feature, a very fun feature about why a PvP mode in Helldivers 2 wouldn't really work, we do have a feature over at the Nerd Stash from Julio Lapine, and it was a really good article. I really enjoyed reading through it there. So I'll leave a link to that as well in the description. But getting to back to the story specifically here, yeah, man, it's a good story. That's the best way to put it. This is one of those things that in 2024 for gaming, It's been just unstable at best and bad for a lot of games and for a lot of studios. So when you got to me like Pocket Pair with Pal World or with Arrowhead Game Studios with Helldivers 2, it's a breath of fresh air. You're excited to see it. You're happy for the game developers. You're happy that people are having fun playing video games this year, because it really seems like this is the year where people are like, yeah, this live service sucked. This game sucked. This new release sucked. Everything sucks. So it's good when something actually comes out that people are excited for.
Yeah, it reminds you of the golden day. Well, I can't even say golden day because it's always been a thing for games. But yeah, it is great to see a few of these games that come out to where you're like, yo, this looks kind of cool. It does. We want to play it? Absolutely. Let's set up a time like we used to when we were teenagers and just have a good night, man. So yeah, Pal World still isn't a thing for me, but I do see how awesome it is. And I do love seeing that people can have fun in these kind of worlds. Pokemon Arc sounds like a cool idea to me. And I really wish I can get into it more. But base building just isn't for me, man. But speaking of which, let's go ahead and get out of here. Taylor, what are you playing, bud?
Well, I've been playing Pal World, and I have finally hit that wall of boredom after weeks of playing. I've done a lot in the game, and I know the developers have said, like, hey, you know what? We're completely okay. If you have played enough and you got bored, completely appreciate your time, basically, is the vibe I got from what they said. That's where I'm at right now. I had a fun time with it. Kind of done with it. Until there's a huge update. And that's alright. Because the game, it feels like it's a game that was made, again, what we just said in the last story, to make something fun. And not to make this a live service. And yeah, they're going to add content to it. But until then, I can go play something else. And in between, I've been just playing some Madden 24. Michael, what have you been playing?
Well, I have been playing The Thaumaturge. That game is pretty awesome. I'm going to be streaming that game pretty soon. So shout out to 11-Bit Studios for the review copy for that. So that way I can create content on that one. And I've also have been playing a little bit of Call of Duty Mobile, because I still have that Call of Duty itch that for some reason Modern Warfare 2 and 3 just isn't doing for me. And honestly, mobile isn't doing it either. But it's kind of like having candy. Like, yeah, you need to eat something, but a candy will hold you over until you get like really hungry. So yeah, I haven't been playing a whole lot of things that I can talk about too much. But The Thaumaturge is awesome. Taylor, I think, well, I'm not sure if you're into the slow based strategy kind of games, to where it's a huge focus on story rather than just constant battles. But that's what The Thaumaturge is.
Not really. I'm more into the Civilization Revolution kind of strategy.
Oh,
okay. Games.
Oh man. I love Civilization. So I'm hoping that's why Arras is going to be kind of cool. That was my puppy. Anyway, yeah, I've been playing The Thaumaturge. So Taylor, what are you working on and where can we find you?
Not working on a whole lot. You can find me in our Discord, the link for which is in the description of this episode. Michael, what are you working on and where can the people find you?
I am working on some new content for TikTok and YouTube, including with the previously mentioned Thaumaturge game. And you can find me on X/Twitter with @M_MOSLEY_JR. You can also find me on TikTok and Twitch with Fox Daddy. That's FOXDADDY.
All right, let's get out of here, Michael. I want to thank you for hosting this thing. And you mained pretty much the whole podcast today, so I appreciate it. I want to thank anyone for listening. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. See you then.